Welcome to another episode of the Access Vikings podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined by Ben Gessling and Michael Rand of the Star Tribune via Zoom. The post-Kirk Cousins era has officially begun. Kirk Cousins agrees to sign a four-year whopping $180 million contract. Reportedly, 100 of that, or not reportedly, we got it, $100 million guaranteed, right, Ben?
Yep. He did what he has done so well throughout the course of his career and maximized his value. It was not going to be with the Vikings at that number, but he got the deal that he had been looking for.
Yeah, and then that's something that I think few people would maybe have seen coming this even just a couple weeks ago or a month ago, to say that he was going to get $45 million guaranteed for each of the first 2 years of that deal, with another $10 million guaranteed thrown into that. And the Falcons saying, well, in that case, we're going to lock you up for the next 4 years, even though you turn 36 years old this summer. The Vikings play the Falcons at US Bank Stadium this upcoming season. So it sets up all the storylines and possibilities for this. So we'll talk about where the Vikings go from here. We'll talk about how the Vikings got to this point. And the Vikings also made a handful of moves defensively and saw some of their former players walk out the door and agree to deals on the first day of free agency. But Ben, a week ago, Mike, we talked about the line that the Vikings had. Certainly, I was led to believe the Vikings line was a lot shorter from what the Falcons ended up offering. Ben, what was your sense of how this came down to the wire here today?
Well, I don't know that it really did. And that's the part that makes me wonder about it a little bit from the Falcons' perspective. Not that they care what some beat writer in Minnesota thinks, but the Vikings certainly were not going to go to these lengths. My understanding is they kind of were in the same spot they'd been a year ago. They were talking about guaranteed money in 2024, obviously, and then some guarantees, I think, in 2025. I don't know quite what the structure of that would have been, and I doubt it would have been full guarantees. Probably some of the rolling stuff. I don't know that for sure, but I know that they were not looking to go beyond that for obvious reasons because of the quarterback stuff. And, you know, Andrew, you and I have both heard things about the Broncos. I don't know how the math would have worked for the Broncos, given all the dead money they're taking on with Russell Wilson. And it seemed like the Vikings believed that it was really kind of them in Atlanta. So the part that puzzles me a little bit is, who were the Falcons bidding against? I mean,
yes.
Were they led to believe that it would have taken that to get it done? And maybe that's where, you know, all of the stuff over the weekend about, well, it's 50-50, it's a lot closer, don't rule out the Vikings. I think we can probably figure out where that was coming from to peddle that around to the national folks and create the narrative that, hey, this thing is really close, so that the Falcons are perhaps convinced that they have to put a lot of money into it to outbid the Vikings. That might be the case, but from where I think the Vikings were, and, you know, again, maybe some of this is, you got to parse through all of it. Maybe the Vikings are trying to spin things too, but from where I think they were, and just kind of, we've watched them enough to see how they played this, I just don't know why the Falcons would have thought they had to get to this point to get it done. It's just that part makes me scratch my head a little bit.
Grand Casino would like to take a moment and salute the true football fan. The passion, the hope, the anticipation, that incomparable feeling of winning. Grand Casino would also like to take a moment to remind you that you can find all that anticipation, thrill, and winning at Grand Casino. Grand Casino, let your story begin.
Yeah, Mike, what did you think? And to Ben's point, it seemed like the late national narrative push, which is where these things get leaked out last, you know, when you want the leverage to get shoved one way or the other, usually the national reporters are going to be putting out the final steam on these things. And hearing stuff like, well, the Vikings,
part of the national media complex.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And hearing things. And Mike, hearing things like at the very last hour of saying, well, the Vikings are the incumbent, the Falcons are going to have to pry him out. That just screamed to me like, yeah, it was basically trying to gin up that leverage that the Vikings probably weren't offering because they were going nowhere near this deal, as far as we could tell.
Well, I'm
That's
sure they
how.
broke the terms, right? Interesting.
That's how I read it this morning. Like, as I was kind of examining this, I even wrote about it. It's like, it just kind of seems like they are trying to maximize leverage right now, that they have nothing much else going for them. They know that that they're kind of bidding against themselves. So they basically were bidding against themselves at the end. It felt like they just didn't have, I don't know who they were bidding against. I don't know what their kind of end game was, but listen, there's three sides to this negotiation, right? There's the Kirk Cousins side, there's the Viking side, there's the Falcon side. Kirk Cousins won. Kirk Cousins was the big
Oh, no
winner here.
doubt.
Kirk Cousins and Mike McCartney were the big winners, like they always are. They won again. Vikings were the runners up. That Vikings were the runners up. The Falcons took third in this case. I don't think the Falcons got a very good deal. I think they overpaid. Maybe they don't care. Maybe all they want is a little bit of quarterback stability after having been in the wilderness for 2 years. So I don't know, but that's the way I read it. Like, but it just, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. All you need is two teams to make a market. It just doesn't seem like the Vikings offer was going to be anywhere near that. I feel like you could have had Kirk Cousins for, a first year guaranteed, almost all of a second year guaranteed, and then like a third year kind of tacked on to the end. I feel like even that would have been more than what the Vikings were going to do, unless I'm reading it wrong. So the fact that they went way past that, gave him $100 million guaranteed, that surprised me. And it just kind of shows you the Vikings probably weren't really close to that. And in the end, it probably wasn't much of a horse race. They just made it seem like it was.
Go buy your lawnmowers at Home Depot, kids. Like Mr. Blank may need some money. I don't know.
Yes.
Probably not. Obviously, he does
He's got
not. But
money. He's a blank check.
you
He
can
writes a
throw it
blank check.
around, I guess. But yeah, the I mean, Kwesi. We've heard Kwesi talk. It's an econ thing about the winner's curse over the past number of years. He's mentioned it a couple times. It's just basically just this idea that if you are the high bidder for something and you win the bid, well, now you have that thing. And this is not to say that Kirk Cousins is not a very good NFL quarterback. It's just being the guy that pays the most for stuff. And we've seen the Vikings do this in the past. This was kind of Rick Spielman in the past, where it's okay. I mean, I guess cool that you can spend that much on your furniture for your living room, but I don't know that you needed to spend that much. So, I mean, I guess good for you. If you can do it, great. But you probably could have maximized your money a little bit better. I don't know. There's a little bit of that to me, the winner's curse idea that, yeah, you won the bid, but now you've got to be happy with Kirk Cousins at that price for the rest of his 30s. And maybe durability production wise, he'll prove them right. But yeah, I just don't know that they would have had to go that far to get it done.
Yeah, the Falcons strike me as the more of a team that the Vikings were back in 2018. Now I know Atlanta's not an NFC championship caliber team or coming off that season, but that offense, as we talked about, it might not be the best skill position group compared to the Vikings, but it's a pretty great group. And then defensively, with Raheem Morris coming in, they've got the talent on that side of the ball, and there's such a bad division that, as Tom Brady found out late in his career, can obviously be pretty great. So with the
You have home
Falcons,
playoff games in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. You do not want to go in there. I'll tell you that.
the Falcons, though, seem to be at that more desperate place where the Vikings said, you know what? We just saw two postseason appearances in 6 seasons with this guy. If you're the ownership, that's what you're thinking. And as we've talked about ad nauseum, this ownership group is infatuated with the idea of getting a rookie quarterback in, enjoying that pay scale, enjoying the fresh start too, and potentially 10 to 15 years at the position of stability as opposed to just 5 years and then piecemealing it year after year. So now the Vikings find themselves on the flip side of that. What, before we move on to talk about where the Vikings go from here, what is Kirk's legacy in Minnesota? Ben, how would you sum that up?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the money. I mean, certainly a lot of production. I mean, he goes down as Well, I think this is kind of the start of my story today. He ends up second in franchise history in touchdown passes. He's third in passing yards. He's third in starts, obviously playing in an era that's quite a bit different than when Fran Tarkenton set all those records that he still holds. But he has all of those things. He went to a couple of Pro Bowls. He's been a four in his career. He led the largest comeback in NFL history a year ago. Won a division title, won their first road playoff game in 15 years, I think, since the moon over Lambeau.
Yes.
And it put up a lot of success and certainly became, I think, a pretty popular figure, especially late in his career in Minnesota. But, you know, one playoff win, 0-1 in home playoff games, and $185 million, that's what it got you. So, he came here on the first fully guaranteed veteran contract in NFL history, which kind of put that attachment to him that everything about him was going to be talked about in that context. And I think it always has been. So you can do that. I mean, you certainly can do that, but you're always going to be judged in those terms. And you now have two teams in his career. He's gone to Pro Bowls for both of them. And both of them have said, as much as we like you, there's a limit to this that we are going to say enough. And he goes and hits the open market twice. I don't know how many four-time Pro Bowl quarterbacks do that. I mean, it's a unique path. I think most quarterbacks have not gone that way, obviously. Most quarterbacks end up playing in one place a lot of their career. And Kirk Cousins and Mike McCartney may say, look, you can do that, but you've left a lot of money on the table in the process. And they may be right about that. But I think the way he has approached it has – this was consistent with that. And I think as a result of that, the way you are evaluated, the money is always going to be part of that. And I think that's going to be true in Atlanta. It certainly was true in Washington. And I think ultimately is a big part of it here.
Yeah, Mike, what are you going to remember about Kirk Cousins in Minnesota?
A lot of what Ben said, and two things. One, he proved the Mike Zimmer prophecy right in that he got both those guys fired eventually. Because let's be honest, like they tightened their window when they went with Kirk Cousins, right? Like by putting that much into quarterback in terms of the
when
cap.
Their defense got old.
What's that?
And when their defense got old.
The defense got old, right? But they didn't replace enough of, they weren't able to replace enough of their aging defense because in part they were paying so much for their quarterback. So that it's some of both, but I think the 18-19 season, especially 18, but 19 they won a playoff game. 18 was definitely a disappointment, right? Coming off an NFC title game, he comes in here. That's still a really good team. They don't even make the playoffs. They're 8-7-1. Everything just kind of looks off. They fire the offensive coordinator. Then, you know, 19's fine. They win a playoff game. He gets the extension. Then it's COVID. Like it just gets kind of weird in there. You can't blame him entirely for all that. Certainly seemed a lot more comfortable in the back half of his career here with Kevin O'Connell. Probably played a little bit better, especially in the first, you know, most of the first eight games in 2023. But I guess overall, it's a little bit underwhelming. And I think ultimately the way I think of this move is that Atlanta maybe saved the Vikings from themselves. This is what had to happen right now. This is what had to happen. This was the path forward. This is when they needed to say thanks, but no thanks to Kirk Cousins. And unless, you know, there was some, you know, magical deal that he wasn't going to take, like this had to happen. And so I think this was the best thing Kwesi has done so far. And I think that this will ultimately prove them to be this was the right move. If they got to get it right now with the quarterback, but this was the right move at this time.
This is wild to me because this is not what they wanted. They wanted to re-sign Kirk.
Atlanta saved them from themselves. Atlanta saved them from themselves because this is what needed to happen.
And obviously, Ben, it's in the context, that they had the line of that they wanted him at a certain price, obviously, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what I was going to say is this is what they wanted through a probably fairly narrow path. I mean, it was a little bit of a bank shot what they were trying to pull off in terms of we have a free agent quarterback and we want to re-sign him. At the same time, we are trying to get his replacement, and fairly obviously trying to get his replacement, given the attention they pay to the quarterbacks and given kind of the things that we've heard and said, and just, you know, doing the math that this is a regime going into year three that hasn't really touched the quarterback position yet. And of course they're going to do that, especially when they're picking this high that they don't plan to be doing very often. And it's this type of a quarterback class. So the path they were trying to pull off would have been tricky. It would have required Cousins to sign up for in an arrangement where he signs maybe a team-friendly deal, certainly not a top-of-the-market deal as we saw, and kind of says, I'm okay with the idea of maybe it's a year, maybe it's two, but you are actively trying to replace me with a first-round pick, possibly the highest drafted quarterback in franchise history, and I have to fend off all of the momentum that now would exist because he hasn't had to deal with that. I mean, he has not had at any point a backup that had enough goodwill or enough momentum in kind of the perception of the fan base to put him on the hot seat. If you trade it up, and again, this is a lot of investment in one position when you have other needs too, but if you would sign him and then you trade up to say, 3 or 4 and get Drake May, the second Cousins has a bad game, it's going to be talk radio. It's going to be columnists in our newspaper. It's going to be the fans saying, put the rookie in. And how was he going to feel about that? I mean, a couple of conversations I had today, and I've wondered about this. I think we all have, especially based on kind of the one time we got even near this was Justin Fields. And it was like, oh, okay, how is this going to be perceived in his camp if they brought in Justin Fields? I wonder if this would have gone well if they had drafted a quarterback, and would he have been up for this bank shot? Maybe ultimately that was part of it, is him saying, I'm not going to allow you effectively to do this. Because if you look at the deal he got with the Falcons, they're committed to him for 2 years, and then there's the rest of that signing bonus, and I think there's some third-year guaranteed money. The Falcons could be in the market for a quarterback as well in this draft, but if you're going to take one, now you have this massive Kirk Cousins deal that you have to deal with too. So I think the structure of the deal in some ways required the commitment that almost precludes you from drafting a quarterback, at least taking one that high in the draft. And I think that tempered how far the Vikings were going to go. I think it's quite a gambit from Cousins and Mike McCartney to kind of back the Falcons into that corner. I just don't think the Vikings were going to go there. So ultimately, when they couldn't pull off this kind of one path to victory, to borrow some of the language we're going to hear in about 8 months from now on election night, it just didn't seem like they were going to be able to pull it off.
Well, how close we were, though, too, because as we always say, it only takes one team to fall in love with them. And there was one, apparently. There was seemingly one in the Atlanta Falcons to pry him out, because the Vikings bar to keep him certainly would have been lower than $45 million fully guaranteed over the next 2 years at 36 years old, coming off a torn Achilles, a Hall of Fame businessman, Mike.
Yes. I would just have one more question for you guys before we move on to the what's next piece. How much of this do you think is just the flat out money and structure, and how much of this is like Kirk Cousins wanting to feel like he's wanted? And I know those two things kind of go hand in hand, but you guys know him better than I do. Ben, especially, I mean, you did the big story out in Michigan. Like, how much weight does that carry for him? Like, a team that genuinely like was going to invest in him, not just with money, but with kind of, hey, we think you're the guy.
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of it. And that has always, and he said it, that's always been part of his story. He's been the guy that when Michigan State brought him in, you know, he's competing with Nick Foles, and I think Brian Hoyer was there as well. I mean, they had all of these quarterbacks in the mix. He gets hurt in high school. Washington decides not to keep him. The Vikings sign him, but then Mike Zimmer doesn't really want him. That, you know, there's all these weird dynamics at all. And even the last 2 years, I think this has played into it, because they give him a 1 year extension in 2022, which there was talk, and Andrew and I have both heard it, there was talk that year of trading him and just blowing the whole thing sky high. You know, I think the Colts were in the mix. There was talk of like getting rid of a lot of these veterans. Adam Thielen, there was talk of getting rid of him at that point and just starting the whole thing over. So that was 22. 23, they say, we're not doing it. We're not giving you the guarantees that you want, the commitment that you want, kind of this showing you that you're the guy. Instead, we're going to put the void years in, which basically put this series of events in motion. I mean, they could have probably gotten him cheaper last year, certainly, than they would have if they'd tried to outbid the Falcons this year. But some of this was them last year looking at it and saying, you won the division, you had a good year, you're healthy, and because the Achilles was not an issue at this point, and we're still going to decide, no, we're not doing this because we don't want to make the type of commitment at this age that you want, given the production, given the fact that the short-term deals are hard to massage cap-wise, and given the possibility of a rookie quarterback. So I think a lot of this, yes, is him wanting to feel wanted and wanting a contract that would provide that. Because had he signed here, the Vikings would have had all the leverage in the world. And I think he probably knew that. I'm sure Mike McCartney knew that. But I have talked to enough people about it to think somebody coming to get him was going to be a theme of these negotiations. And the Falcons did it. The Vikings, I don't think we're going to go that route as robustly as the Falcons were, at least in terms of the money and not just the public statements. And that's ultimately what won the day.
Well, the good news for the Vikings, the silver lining, or for fans who wanted to keep Kirk, but at least maybe want some kind of sun on the horizon at quarterback, is the Falcons have the number 8 overall pick. Theoretically, they're not going to be taking a quarterback at 8 overall.
How interesting would that be? If they did it anyway.
Sorry,
Oh my
Kirk.
gosh. No.
That would be pretty wild, but I can't imagine. Maybe they might even be looking to trade back if the Vikings were potentially trying to trade up for a
They
JJ
made it back
McCarthy
to
type.
11.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Well, what is next for the Vikings? This can move quickly, but we'll go through a list of names that are available or reportedly available, whether via trade or signing, and who makes sense and who doesn't. The one name that people want to throw out right away, and the one guy that doesn't seem to have much of a landing spot now, is Justin Fields with the Chicago Bears. I'm sure we're pretty opinionated on why this may or may not fit Kevin O'Connell, but Ben, what do you think about people throwing that name out there as certainly the Bears are looking to move on from Fields, and the Vikings would know a lot about him, not only from going through the scouting process of the draft a couple years ago, but also playing against him.
Yeah, it seems like an odd fit to me in terms of, I mean, he was better, I think, the second half of the season, but I don't know that when we hear Kevin O'Connell talk about accuracy, rhythm, timing, all of those things, I don't know that that's Justin Fields. I think that that's a hard fit to make the guy, and especially you're trading in the division. I mean, Kwesi's done it before, but you're trading to a team that already has a lot of draft capital and a lot of money to spend, and probably is already going to be playing Caleb Williams against you for the next however long. That seems like a hard one to pull off to me.
Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, it seems weird to me too, just because he seems like a 2-year solution at least, because you'd have to think that any team that trades for him probably wants to pick up the 5th-year option or at least negotiate something there. So if you're going to trade for Justin Fields, you're kind of in the same problem you were with Kirk Cousins, where you've got multiple years of the guy and then you're still trying to draft a quarterback. So I don't think Fields is it. I don't know where he's going to go. I can't figure out really what his market is at this point. Maybe they just kind of wait and hope that a team gets more desperate for a quarterback later on, or maybe they just hang on to him and, kind of see where it goes, because there's no crime in that. I just really feel like they're in the market now for a 1-year stopgap, and they're gonna draft their quarterback. That just kind of feels like the market they're in right now.
Here is the path I think you take. Seattle in 2012. Get
Yes.
the fungible veteran. They signed Matt Flynn, and then they drafted Russell
Money,
Wilson.
Matt.
They drafted Russell Wilson in the third round. Nobody had any allegiance to Matt Flynn, even though it was John Schneider who had come out of the Green Bay front office, knew Matt Flynn from that process. I think they overlapped there. But Matt Flynn did not have the level of, you know, kind of standing in the fan base or goodwill in the NFL that, you know, guys that have been more accomplished even than Kirk Cousins have had in terms of Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, where we've seen the when are they going to put the draft pick in, or even that Kirk Cousins would have had. So you get a guy that can help get you through if the rookie's not ready. But as soon as the rookie shows he's ready to go, you can kind of push that guy to the side, and you kind of have the mentor for the guy that's coming, but you also have a player that kind of understands why he's there, I guess. It's not exciting, but to me, you go get that guy, and then you move whatever you need to move to get the quarterback that you want, and you say, we are building around this player. Let's go from there. That's the route. You know, nobody's asking me, but that's the route I would take. If I'm playing Madden, that's the route I take.
Sounds like you want a Joe Flacco.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of names in that class, but yeah.
Sam Darnold.
Yeah, Sam Darnold would be fine. Like, they're regrouping. They're not going to be that good next year, and that's okay. I don't need them to be great next year. They're trying to be really good in 25, 26, 27. I don't think they're punting completely on 24, but they're not saying we want to be great in 24. They're saying we're regrouping. We'd like to be good next year, but we might not be. And it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if the veteran quarterback wasn't great. The rookie got his feet wet. We went 5-12 and got another top 10 pick and then started to really build that out in 25 and beyond. So I don't think
puts you at the time where all of the other teams in this division that are loaded up with young draft capital right now,
yes,
have to start making those decisions.
Right. So
the Lions are going to have to make it on Jared Goff. The Packers are going to have to pay Jordan Love. This is not a great time to be trying to patch a roster together and win this division. You had two of the final four teams in the NFC from the NFC North. So it does, I think, make a little bit of sense to say, you know, kind of the route you're talking about, Mike, is load up the draft capital and position yourself to be ready to pounce when those teams have to start making tough financial decisions in a year or two.
Yeah, because when you look at the free agent quarterbacks who are available, what made Kirk the belle of the ball was because he was the only one that was really coveted or noteworthy among the group. Gardner Minshew goes to the Las Vegas Raiders, my guy.
Good guy.
Unfortunately, he's gone. Jacoby Brissett is a New England Patriot once again. Russell
get
Wilson.
$8 million bucks or something?
Say that again.
Brissett get like $8 million.
Yeah. So and it's not cheap. As we see with why Nick Mullins sticks around is because a cheap, affordable backup help is not easy to come by. Because even the Brissetts, the Minshews, Minshew got $15 million guaranteed on a 2-year deal. So. It is expensive, and Russell Wilson ends up in Pittsburgh on a 1-year league minimum deal only because the Denver Broncos are paying a $39 million bill for him this year. So the rest of the lineup is Ryan Tannehill. It is Marcus Mariota. It's Drew Locke. It's Trey Lance. If you want to trade for him out of Dallas,
same name we were talking about after Kirk got hurt in October.
Pretty much. Yeah. Except for
Dobbs out there.
I was just going to say, except for Josh Dobbs, I don't think anybody's expecting a reunion between Dobbs and O'Connell. Carson Wentz could be wearing a new pair of gym shorts, potentially. he's out there. Mason Rudolph, Pittsburgh Steeler. So it's the quarterback doldrums are truly that, the doldrums.
Oh. Yeah.
So
I mean, it feels like 2014 with Matt Castle, and how long can he hold off Teddy Bridgewater? Except that maybe even less than that. I don't know.
Yeah, because Castle even then was only a couple years removed from his 2011 season, right?
Yeah, and he'd been productive in Kansas City. I mean, yeah. I mean, there was I think this is what you're talking about. The one in Kansas City. He had the good year in New England and then gets traded to the Chiefs.
Yeah, so the Vikings, as Mike was saying, it's going to be ugly. And a rookie is either going to have to learn very quickly if they're going to be any kind of competitive, or there's going to be some late career magic with Sam Darnold or Drew Locke or Joe Flacco. I guess we did see some comeback magic from Joe Flacco.
It's going to be interesting. I think the the call to Montana that we have reason to believe happened last year, that ship has probably sailed. I mean, maybe you, nah, they're not going to try that. Whatever. There's a little red meat for you, aggregators. Yeah, it's going to be find somebody to kind of hold the fort until the rookie is ready to go. So, somebody to play Riley Reiff to the rookies after Cleveland.
Ah, there's a deep cut.
A deep cut.
That is a very deep cut. Ezra Cleveland got paid.
He did.
All the guards got paid, it would seem.
Yeah, Dalton Risner, it's been a good week, I would think. I mean, maybe he won't get that. I don't think he's going to get that, but maybe get a little more wind in his sails than he otherwise would have.
Yeah, it was incredible to see the amount of guards that got paid. Just ridiculous sums of money. Ezra Cleveland being one of them, getting paid in Jacksonville after the Vikings dealt him mid-season. We'll see if they're going to re-sign Dalton Risner. It does not seem initially that he was headed directly back to Minnesota, but these things so often happen where you hear from one player's representatives, oh no, we're going to test the market, and then the next day they are right back re-signing with the team. So we shall see on a number of these guys. We do have answers though for a few of them. We do know Marcus Davenport is moving on to the Detroit Lions. We know Jordan Hicks is reportedly agreed to a deal with the Cleveland Browns. According to ESPN, he's got a 2-year deal in place. This comes after the Vikings effectively replaced him with Blake Cashman coming home. The former Gopher and Eden Prairie star had a breakout year for the Texans, over 100 tackles, career high 13 starts for D'Amico Ryans in Houston. And so not only do they bring Blake Cashman back to be a starter for the Vikings, they bring his teammate and Jonathan Grenard, the star edge rusher for Houston. Ben, they also bring in Andrew Van Ginkle, a former Dolphins edge rusher, former Brian Flores Dolphins edge rusher. So what did
former
you think of
scorer against Kevin O'Connell and Wes Phillips whilst playing for Brian Flores in the infamous 2020 Dolphins victory over the Rams that helped precipitate the end of the Jared Goff era in LA?
Those things don't leave a coach's mind. I'm sure O'Connell was remembering that.
Well, it was funny. I mean, you mentioned that, I think, somewhat in jest, but I brought the game up to Wes Phillips last summer when I was doing my story on Brian Flores, and he just kind of had this, like, he sighed and looked at me like, why? He said, like, I thought I would never watch that game again, and then we hired Brian Flores, and I had to go back and watch it. So it was still, like, a few years later, he was just like, I don't want to remember this game right now. I will humor you and go down memory lane, you obnoxious reporter, but I don't want to be doing this right now.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Ben's talking about a 2020 game between the Rams and Dolphins, in which basically signaled to the Rams or confirmed to the Rams that we are done with Jared Goff. It went that poorly against Brian Flores.
5 or 6 turnover-worthy plays, according to Pro Football Focus. I think the Rams maybe had him charted at 7. I mean, we wrote about this a little bit. The Jared Goff can't crack Brian Flores thing that obviously changed this year, but that was the Super Bowl, too, is that Brian Flores' defense pitched a near shutout against Jared Goff and the Rams in Super Bowl 53 down in Atlanta, as it were. But yes, Andrew Van Ginkle, to wrap this Gesling-esque tangent up, scored a touchdown in that game and has been an effective blitzer, an effective piece, I think, for the Dolphins in kind of those is he coming, is he not type roles that Flores likes his defenders to have.
Yeah, and with them signing Grenard almost $20 million per year, they ponied up to shore up the edge rusher spot that's so barren, because Davenport's gone, Hunter would presumably be gone, and DJ Wonnum as well. They're the top three on their entire pecking order at edge rusher was walking out the door. So they bring in Grenard, they bring in Van Ginkle. They're probably going to need to bring in more via the draft, if not re-signing DJ Wonnum. So Ben, this all has to but close the door on Danielle Hunter, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I would think. I mean, I don't see a way to bring it back. Were you surprised at all how little we heard on that front today? I mean, obviously it's still 2 days before the market can officially, any of these things can officially be done. But I thought we'd hear a little more steam today about Hunter having a lot of interest or taking, getting offers or teams expressing interest, any of that kind of stuff. I didn't see much of anything today with that.
Yeah, the people who broke the bank were the interior rushers. It was Chris Jones, it was Christian Wilkins, which I
Yeah.
gotta say, I wasn't shocked to see the whole agent industrial complex seeing Christian Wilkins' market getting pumped up right up to the lead up time. And there were four teams that kept getting repeated as interested in, including the Vikings, who we know
Yeah.
did contact Christian Wilkins' reps about him, but we have no idea to what extent they were actually, I doubt they were anywhere near 27.5 million annually, which is what it ended up being reportedly. But these four
Phrase,
teams.
just a brief aside, the phrase they checked in or expressed interest in, I used to play that game more when I was a younger, dumber, well, maybe you can decide whether dumber is true or not. Certainly was younger, beat writer. But then you kind of learn it's the easiest thing in the world to say they checked in on somebody because that can mean we love this guy, we will do whatever it takes to get him, or hey, if you find that you don't get what you're looking for on the market, give us a call. I mean, both of those things can be phrased as them checking in or expressing interest in somebody. So when you see that this week, which you will a lot, the discerning reader should understand that there is a wide gap that can be covered by the phrase checked in or expressed interest in.
Representatives also just outright lie sometimes.
Yeah.
That
There's
one
that.
is that one has happened before where, and there are some media members who just don't care about getting lied to, which is astonishing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess with seeing Wilkins getting that price, so my point was the four teams that kept getting tabbed to Christian Wilkins at the beginning of this lead up time. None of those four teams were the team that signed him in the Las Vegas Raiders. So clearly, what was happening, and this is, reckless speculation, whatever, put my hat on. This is clearly something where the team is and the agent is wanting to drum up more of a market outside of the one main suitor, which for Christian Wilkins was the Las Vegas Raiders. How do you do that? You say, look at all these other teams that are interested in him. That one tweet about how many teams were interested in Christian Wilkins was for one member, it was for an audience of one. It was for the Las Vegas Raiders. So they
An
could
audience
see.
of an audience with a bad haircut.
Yeah, so they could see. Look at all these other teams. You better up your offer to $27.5 million, even though the Vikings were probably nowhere near that, because we saw that they've landed at $19 million a year for Jonathan Greenard out of Houston. So I just, it's so absurd how these things work, how all of this works in the complex. And as these days go on, more whispers happen and we learn more and more. Oh, that's what actually happened. Oh, that's how that actually went down. And we get to share those things with you lovely listeners. But to answer your question in a roundabout fashion, I was surprised that we didn't hear more about Danielle Hunter, but we also didn't see a ton of edge rushers fly off the board. And frankly, he's the biggest name. And I think it almost undercuts him the way that the other guys, like the guys that the Vikings signed and Grenard, Van Ginkel, if they start going before the big dog goes, then that's kind of saying like, hey, we're not really expecting you to really push much of the market. We're just going to go ahead and take what we think is there for us, and we're not expecting you to go full Saquon Barkley or full Chris Jones or Christian Wilkins or whatever. Like the way the running backs happened this week or today, I guess it would have been, it went like Pollard, Swift, Saquon, and then they all just started going. And like that's kind of how it happens. They all kind of fall in line once the big guys
Kind of like
start
your auction
going.
draft. It's a position run, and if you can get ahead of it, great.
Yeah, exactly. And so
No money.
with Hunter not going yet, it makes me think like, boy, they didn't get what they wanted right out of the gate in terms of me speculating. And it's going to take them kind of goading a team to get up to where they want, which I believe is mid-20s. From everything I can tell, this guy's wanted to be paid well north of what the Vikings paid for their premier edge rusher in this go around of free agency. So I was surprised to see that, but it also doesn't mean that he's not going to get 23, 24, 25. If Chicago's a team you keep hearing about with him. If Chicago comes around and decides, you know what, we'll pay you what we gave Montez Sweat, maybe that'll get the job done for him. But I don't see that happening, certainly with the Vikings.
No, I don't either. And it is interesting to me that, well, it's interesting, but it also kind of tracks that they decided before we try to engage bringing him back, and they probably already had the conversations, but rather than attempting to do that, or at least waiting it out, they say, nope, we are moving on. We are getting other players to fill your spots that are a lot cheaper and may just kind of fit what we want at this point. There's been a long history with Danielle Hunter and the Vikings. We've talked about it a lot. I think some of it has been moments where his camp has tried to play pretty aggressively in terms of what they want, what they think they're worth. I mean, the one I think of the most probably is 2020, the day he has the neck surgery. They start leaking out that he wants to be paid among the highest level edge rushers in the league, which I think at the time was probably Nick Bosa, I assume.
It was high 20s. Yeah.
Yeah, like 26, 27, something like that. And it's like, that's an odd time to make that request when this guy's out for the year. And then obviously he tears his pec, and he came back and was an outstanding player this year and had a great season. But even then, I think they always saw him as really, really good, but something slightly less than game wrecker level. And he wants to be paid like a game wrecker. So I know there was last summer, there was a little bit of that opinion in the organization of, well, if you want to be paid that way, go wreck games, go be unblockable for stretches of the season, rather than kind of having some of these days where you get there. And he certainly had some of them, but I think they felt like if you want that, you need to produce at that level a little bit more frequently than you do. So the fact that they were pretty quick to say, yeah, we're going to move in another direction, I thought was interesting.
Yeah. And what's clear about what the Vikings want to do and what they keep wanting to do with the free agents they sign, guys like Jordan Hicks, who is leaving for Cleveland. He's going to be 32 this summer. He's an outlier in terms of guys they brought in who are past their prime. He was a veteran that they tried to rent to come in and rent some leadership, essentially. But typically what they do is like what they did with Byron Murphy last year, which is a young guy coming off a rookie contract. Van Ginkle is going to be 29. Blake Cashman is going to be 28. Grenard, who signed the 4-year deal, the longest of the three, is going to be 27 entering next season. These are all guys who they view as being part of this 3+ year plan for them, and guys that they continue to build around. Frankly, they need that. They can't afford these rentals, these 1-year stopgaps anymore, because this roster has enough holes in it that you can't be affording to replace those holes every single year. Otherwise, you're filling nothing. Otherwise, yep. You just keep having to dig. So what did you think of the guys they did add, and where this specifically, where this front seven, because that's where all these pieces are coming from, how that's been remade?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I put together the edge rusher preview thing, we were doing these position previews, I had Grenard and Van Ginkle both in there. I mean, Van Ginkle was because of the Flores connection, but Grenard was interesting because he had an awfully effective year, both in terms of, I mean, the sack numbers were good, but pass rush win rate was really high, and he was a good run defender for them. So the connection with D'Amico Ryans, I think, probably helped Kwesi do some backgrounding on him to see what kind of guy are we getting here. I thought that made a lot of sense when they did it, and I think the price point is more in the range of where they wanted to be. Van Ginkle, I think, makes sense for Flores. I think that is a reunion that makes a lot of sense. Cashman, I think, will help them as well. I mean, it is certainly, I mean, it's those three and Ivan Pace, which is interesting because it would seem with those, and, you know, they're going to have a lot of different matchups and different things that you're going to do, but you should be able to play in your base maybe a little bit more often than you otherwise would have been able to do last year. So I wonder what that means for Josh Metellus. Do they make him a deep safety? I mean, all of these things are ways from being figured out, but Harrison Smith is a puzzle piece here too, and they'll find roles for everybody. But that part of it is interesting. I still think they need more help on the defensive line. Certainly you need a corner, and I think they'll try to go after a corner here. But I think overall the front seven is probably in a little bit better shape than it was.
Yeah, in interior defensive line too, as we talk about Christian Wilkins, they could certainly afford to add there.
Yeah.
The only guys they have under contract right now are Harrison Phillips, Dean Lowry, and Jaquelin Roy. Jonathan Bullard is a free agent. So is Tonga. So is James Lynch.
Cap casualty too.
Who?
Dean Lowry feels like he could be a cap casualty. They'd save like $2 million if they got rid of him.
Yeah, and how much? I know he had the groin injury last year and had to miss some time, but how much would you really be missing there? So even the guys they've got signed, you could kind of stand to improve upon. I would expect, from what I've heard, Jonathan Bullard's a guy they could bring back, but that would be no more than a low-level signing and somebody that you would maybe want as more of a depth piece than the guys that they've had to really lean on. They had to lean on him a lot more than they might have wanted to last year. But yeah, to your point, defensive line is, I don't think they're done adding there. And then we haven't even talked about the corners and that whole group. They bring back everybody from last year's depth chart, but, same story. They can stand to improve at that spot. So it wouldn't shock me if they added, some veteran corner, a veteran corner or two, somebody that can come at a bargain rate for them. 'Cause those top guys cost a fair bit. I saw that the Vikings were one of the teams in on L'Jarius Sneed, and I thought, I suppose the first step would have to be Kirk leaving, and we've gotten to that point because they couldn't afford him and right. L'Jarius Sneed, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a big need. I mean, a corner is a big need. We saw it at the end of the season that they need corners that can make plays in the ball, that can deal with bigger receivers that can go over the top. Though that's an expensive need, though. I mean, it's especially if your first round pick is probably a quarterback. You know, are you going to draft a corner late first round, trading back in, or probably not trading back in if you have to move up for the quarterback? So you're talking second round pick, maybe. You know, we've seen that game before. I don't know that you assume that player comes in and is the reliable option either, especially if you want Byron Murphy to be your slot corner, which I think they probably would prefer. You need a good outside corner somewhere, and that probably needs to be a veteran. So it's a big need, but yeah, it's expensive to do it.
Yeah, Brian Flores might be sitting in the building saying, you don't need to pay for cover guys. We've got this plan. See, we don't need to cover. We just rush eight every single time. It's fine.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've seen that work. We also saw that get picked apart at the end of the season, I suppose, too, once they kind of got figured out. So, I mean, that may look different this year, the defensive as a whole.
That's true. Yeah, they could certainly overhaul the entire playbook, depending on what personnel they get in there. That seems to be Brian Flores' thing, year to year.
Yeah. What's in the cupboard?
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll be it for this episode of the Access Vikings podcast. There'll be more developments as free agency rolls along. We'll be here for you guys at StarTribune.com and the Star Tribune podcasts, both Daily Delivery and Access Vikings. Please download those wherever you get your podcasts.